I'll start with the general overview. Your conventional Fannie Freddie jumbo loan, jumbo underwrites to Fannie guidelines most of the time, unless you go to portfolio. Those are going to be for your standard borrowers who have income that is reportable on tax returns that qualifies under 50% debt to income ratio. Then you've got your government loans, which are your USDA, your VA, your FHA. Those are fantastic programs for first-time homebuyers, or maybe not even first-time homebuyers. Sometimes you have a veteran who has that's exempt from the funding fee. The VA rates are actually lower for that particular borrower because he doesn't have to pay a funding fee. USDA is great because it lets you finance up to 102% of the financing, so you almost get a down payment assistance program there. Then you have your non-QM suite. That's going to be for your mostly your self-employed borrowers.
Today on Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell, I'm joined by Michelle Town, a lender who has been serving clients and realtors for more than 30 years. Michelle's clients and colleagues often call her the gal that gets it done. She's built her career on a pioneering, straightforward approach rooted in trust and relentless commitment to keeping her promises. That's what sets Michelle apart. It isn't just her ability to close loans. It's the way she takes care of clients for life. Michelle partners with RE/MAX Big Bear and area experts, and today she's here to help us cut through the noise and gain a clearer understanding of the many financing options available to our clients. We'll talk about the strengths and limitations of conventional financing, FHA, VA, USDA, adjustable rate mortgages, jumbo, portfolio, and even hard money loans. As a real estate professional, I always remind agents and clients, I'm not a lender. Your lender is the true expert. They have access to programs, niche products, and up-to-the-minute rates that shift constantly. But today's conversation will give you a framework of knowledge so that you can confidently guide your clients, reassure them that there's a loan product designed to fit their needs, and then connect with the right lending professional, finalize the perfect solution. Well, good morning, Michelle. It's so great to have you here. I'm so excited to talk with you today and have you share your expertise. You know, your bio makes it clear that trust and service really are the keys to the relationships that you have with your clients. So do you mind sharing a little bit about your background and what brought you to where you are in your career today?
Absolutely, Mark. Thank you first for having me on. I love what I do 99% of the time. There's 1% that I'm like, oh God, loans are not easy anymore. They are definitely tough. And the right professional, the right person hearing and listening to what the client needs is probably the most important. I started in the industry in 1991, right out of college. And I started as a processor and then went to funding. And then went to underwriting and realized, yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be an originator. I wanted to help people on a more a level that was more likable for me and more had more impact. So that's what I do and that's what I love. And I'm here to help and answer questions. I think the most important thing for me is I'm an educator. I'm not a salesperson. I don't sell interest rates. I sell a scenario. Like, a higher interest rate sometimes is better because let's say that somebody wants to put down payment and I'm like, oh my gosh, you've got $20,000 in high interest rate credit cards. I might put them in a rate that's a quarter higher than traditional rates because I just erased $1,200 a month in debt and made their overall disposable income better for their family. And that's the difference between people always ask me, do you think AI is going to take over your job? No,
yeah,
it will.
Yeah.
It's going to allow me more time to talk to my clients.
And I think that's a perfect sort of a segue into the point I always try to make with realtors is that knowing about financing isn't the same thing as being a lender, and having a professional lender that can look at an entire package and see the nuances of where to go with creativity in order to get the best result for the client is important. But our real estate agents, they don't need to know that. They need to know the basics, right? Yeah.
And that's okay. Today we're going to give you a rundown of what to look for, the basics, and especially you get a lot of objections from clients that say, I should probably go FHA or USDA, or what about these down payment assistance programs? It doesn't work for everyone. And it might not, it may, but it may not. So Google is great, but it is also, it can make things a little difficult.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I want to start off, you know, sort of broad today. Can you talk about the main categories of loans today? You know, the difference between conventional and government insured programs and adjustable rate mortgages and hard money. I mean, there's all kinds of different broad categories that are out there. So can you sort of run through a little bit of that?
Right. And so I'll start with just a general overview. Your conventional Fannie Freddie jumbo loans. So jumbo underwrites to Fannie guidelines most of the time, unless you go to portfolio. Those are going to be for your standard borrowers who have income that is reportable on tax returns that qualifies under 50% debt to income ratio. Then you've got your government loans, which are your USDA, your VA, your FHA. Those are fantastic programs for first-time home buyers, or maybe not even first-time home buyers. Sometimes when you have a veteran who has that's exempt from the funding fee, the VA rates are actually lower for that particular borrower because he doesn't have to pay a funding fee. USDA is great because it lets you finance up to 102% of the financing. So you almost get a down payment assistance program there. Then you have your non-QM suite. That's going to be for your mostly your self-employed borrowers, borrowers who just are missing that income to get under that 50% debt ratio. And we might look at their assets and create an asset stream for them. And then you have.
Let me stop you right there, because you used a phrase I think a lot of people don't know. What does non-QM stand for?
Oh, non-QM stands for non-traditional mortgages. Back in 2008 and 2009, when TRID came out and the government came in and said, "Hey, Mr. Bank of America, you need to be bailed out. If you want to be bailed out, we're going to give you money, but we're going to make you do only qualified mortgages." So a qualified mortgage is full documentation, usually 43% debt ratio. What happened was 60% of the world did not fit into that box. So Wall Street came out and did non-QM. And it is basically hedge funds. They sell it. It's like a normal loan. The only thing is you can't make a deposit to that bank. That's the only difference between non-QM and qualified mortgages. So non-QM is going to be for your self-employed borrowers, people who are a little bit outside the box, that need a different income stream or possibly have lower credit scores than what traditional lenders want to see.
So there's a critical difference between a qualified mortgage and a non-qualified mortgage. The rules change, but you know, the most basic difference is that a qualified mortgage has less risk attached to it, because it's a larger down payment, it's better credit scores, it's more assets, it's more income. So there's less risk for the lender in creating that loan. And that's why they call it a fully qualified mortgage, right? Anytime it's non-qualified, it doesn't mean that you can't get the loan, but there's more risk for the lender because you're starting to get away from what I would call best practices. Is that a good way to describe it?
So the big banks, they have rules that they have to follow. And part of those rules are this qualified mortgage rule, which is you must hit this. And the banks don't want to take that extra risk. Like you said, non-QM has a slightly different risk level, but I don't want anybody to think that means you're less than, or that loan is less than, because it's not. It's just a different way of qualifying the mortgage that's not set up by the bank rules that were set back in 2008 and 2009. Now, those rules are starting to change a little bit because that's exhausted already, which is fantastic. It's going to allow more people to buy homes. I mean, think about this, Mark. When you and I were buying homes, if you didn't have 20% down, you didn't get a house, right?
Right.
So nowadays, I mean, you can go 0% down with some of these down payment assistance programs. You can go 3% down with conventional. You can go 5% down with jumbo. And you can go 10% down with non-QM. So it's just going to be a different, again, every client's going to be a little bit different.
Perfect. Let's talk a little bit deeper about conventional financing. Can you talk about, you know, to a borrower, who the right client would be for conventional financing? What makes it attractive to them? Are there any downsides necessarily to conventional financing?
So conventional financing is going to be a loan that is insured by Fannie or Freddie. So every loan has to be insured by someone. So if the bank fails for some reason, Fannie and Freddie are going to come in and buy out, you know, buy these loans. So Fannie and Freddie set a specific set of guidelines, and it's all run through an automated system now. So the risk assessment is decided by a computer, basically. Now, and that's where your loan officer comes in. Sometimes we can push that computer, make a couple of tweaks on that computer program and say, no, no, you're misreading this. But traditionally, we're going to run it through an automated system. It's going to give us an approve eligible, a refer eligible, or an approve ineligible, or an out of scope. Out of scope means you don't have a credit score, so you have to downgrade to a manual underwrite. But Fannie and Freddie conventional financing is great for pretty much anybody who has full documentation, no wonkiness, so no RSUs, no bonus that just started, a straight W-2 wage earner or self-employed borrower that's established for 2 to 5 years. That is where your conventional buyers are going to be. There is mortgage insurance if you put less than 20% down on conventional financing. And the biggest misnomer that I see on mortgage insurance, people hate it because they think it's a waste of money. However, I want to remind everyone, back to our earlier conversation, you could not buy a home 20 years ago without putting 20% down. So private mortgage insurance companies, all it is, this is my best way to describe it. They went to Mr. Bank of America and said, Mr. Bank of America, if I have a really qualified client but don't have the down payment, what would it take for you to allow me to sell this loan to you? And Bank of America said, you insure the portion that's over 20%, that's less than 20% down, and we'll go ahead and do the loan. That's how private mortgage insurance came about. They are very low factors if you have great credit scores. I mean, anywhere from 0.1 to 0.45 is what the mortgage insurance factor would be on your loan amount. And that, remember, is not lifetime. It's going to cycle out. The cycle out period is about 5 years if you don't refinance, but you can petition the bank after 2 years. And when you have 20% equity based on the value you purchase your home at, so you're going to have to do a principal reduction to get the mortgage insurance companies to get rid of it, but you can get rid of it. But it's such a minuscule amount on the actual loan. And that's why I love to talk to people about this. I will show them, hey, you're talking $60 more than to buy out the mortgage insurance and have a rate that's 1% higher for 30 years. It doesn't make sense.
Right, right. Okay.
Pitfalls of conventional financing. If the computer program doesn't like you for some reason, you don't get a loan. And we have to try to, if we can't tweak the computer program to like you, for instance, somebody who's putting 10% down that has a 640 FICO score and my debt ratio is at 50%, going to be very difficult to get the computer model to want to do that. A lot of times I'll say, do you have a cosigner that we can put on that has a higher credit score that will make that computer model like your file a little bit more? So that's the downside. And we don't know that until we run it through the system. But your professionals, we're going to look at it. We're going to go, we need to run this first and see if we're going to get an approval.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of downside to conventional financing. You can recast. So recasting means, let's say that you come into some money and you've got an extra $50,000 that you want to put at your mortgage balance. If you can put that down and rates have not gotten better, you can actually reduce your payment. What recasting means is they'll take the money, they'll apply it to your principal balance. They'll rewrite the note for you based on your current rate and the remaining term, and then your payment goes lower and you pay less interest over the life of the loan.
And I absolutely love this conversation because that is not something that I was aware that you could actually do. I mean, that's one of the big downsides when you're sitting, you know, with $50,000 and you put it down. If your payment stays the same, I'd rather do something else with it. But if you can actually have the principal amount re-amortized to lower your monthly payment, that makes it much more beneficial.
But remember, on the downside of that, and I have a personal experience on this, once you give me the money, we're not giving it back to you. We're stingy. 2007 and 8, I had a little bit of extra money. So I was so proud of myself because it was my first home. And I put $50,000 towards my principal. And then, of course, nobody knew what was going to happen in 7 and 8. And I called them like a year later, said, can I have that money back? And they said, no.
No.
So Once you give it to me, I'm not giving it back to you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's switch a little bit to FHA loans and sort of explain, you know, who the right person for that product is and, you know, any downsides that you see with people looking that way.
So FHA loans come in where conventional loans take off. That lower FICO score person that has 10% down, they're going to get a better rate and better overall payment with a 640 score on FHA versus conventional. The downside on FHA is it has two mortgage insurance premiums. The first one is an upfront 1.75%. It's added to the loan amount. You're allowed to finance it, but that money goes into a pool so that other people can do this financing. Then you have a secondary mortgage insurance, which is typically, if you're at conforming limits, 0.55% of your loan amount. That only lasts for about 10 years unless you refinance. FHA's county limits will restrict you sometimes, so you have to watch out for that. FHA will not do a new build condo. They require the property to be in existence for over a year. And the nice thing about FHA, we're able to do spot approvals again, which means, let's say the condo's approval, they either never got the FHA approval or it expired. We can do it, what we call a spot approval, and have you approved on the spot. It doesn't have the loan level pricing adjusters that conventional loans do on condos. You basically gain 75 basis points, which is equivalent to about 1/8% in interest rate. And probably my favorite thing on FHA is the streamlined refinance process. After you've made your sixth payment, you do not have to income qualify again or get an appraisal. We strictly just go off your credit score, make sure you've made all your payments on time, and we have to lower your payment by 0.5%. Pretty easy.
So it's very easy if you get an FHA loan. Let's say that you were to get an FHA loan now, which is, you know, a lot of people are afraid to buy because, you know, interest rates are high in their mind or in the media kind of thing. We won't debate that part of it right now. But if they were to buy a property using an FHA loan today and they make their payments for the next 6 months to a year and interest rates are lower next year, they would be able to refinance very, very easily and get the new rate and the new lower payment.
Less paperwork. And that would be the same with VA. So VA is, you need to be a veteran, right? So, or you need to be a spouse of a veteran. The VA loans are probably my favorite. And they go to 100% financing. You can use your VA benefits more than once. If you have an existing VA loan and you've moved and you're buying a new VA loan, you actually still can do another VA loan. We have a formula that we have to follow based on your eligibility. And a lot of times you can go to 100% financing again, depending on how much you used. There is an upfront FHA or VA premium. That one is anywhere from 3.3% down to 1%, depending on whether or not you've used the VA benefits or not, or if you're exempt from the funding fee, there is none. But the beautiful, like, key point on VA, there's no mortgage insurance monthly.
Okay.
So these rates are lower than conventional financing by at least 0.5% right now. So if I have a buyer who's a veteran, and even though they're putting 20% down and they're like, I don't need to use my VA benefits, and they're exempt from the funding fee, I'm going to convince them, hey, I'm going to give you 0.5% better in interest rate across the board, and it's not going to cost you any more money. I mean, who wouldn't do that?
Awesome. Well, I'm sitting here listening to you sort of describe the differences between the programs, and I'm realizing, there's more than this brain can absorb. with all of the differences, I mean, you know, really, it is a chess piece. So when you're looking at a client, you know, if they're a veteran, you just said they're going to get 0.5% interest rate lower than conventional, plus they get the ability to finance 100%. I mean, there's so many different things about these programs that, you know, that are specific and beneficial to different parties. So I appreciate you sharing.
And then the last government one is USDA. Mm-hmm. There are a couple quirks to USDA. It has to be in a rural area. So we will check the property address for you. You can't own another property. So that's kind of the key. And it is income restricted. So you can't make too much income. You can't own another property. I think they got rid of it. It used to be they wouldn't finance anything with pools, but I think they got rid of that already too. But USDA is fantastic for first-time homebuyers. Again, the rate is lower than conventional financing. The mortgage insurance is minimal compared to conventional financing. We do have to get a GUS approval, which is an automated approval through the system. And typically, if you have good credit, they're going to let you go to 50%. If you don't have good credit, they're going to cap you at about 45%. All of these programs, the VA, USDA, FHA, do allow manual underwriting. Let's say I run you through that automated system and something in the computer doesn't like your file. We can actually downgrade the file to a manual underwrite. And we go back to old school underwriting where I started, which is look at the file. Does it make sense? Is my front end ratio at 36? Is my back end ratio under 50? Do I have 2 months reserves? Voila, you got the deal. The other thing on FHA and VA is for your maximum financing, the minimum credit score is 580 versus on conventional, the minimum credit score is 620. So, and we rarely get an approval with a 620 FICO score on a conventional financing with only 5% down. It's got to have a really, there's got to be other things. But typically when I see a 620 FICO, it means there's been some credit challenges in the past. They've fixed them. Or they might have higher credit card balances. I like to get my clients in front of me up front, like months before they go shopping, because if I can look at their credit report and say, oh my gosh, your $500 Target card is maxed out. If you pay it down to 100, which is $400, your credit score just popped up to a, 700. Let's do that. Let me show you how to use your money wisely.
Yeah. Very, very smart. Good planning. So, gosh, there was something that just went through my mind. This was the thought. I'm such a proponent of home ownership. It's important to recognize that when they study net worth of individuals, property owners' net worths average 44 times what non-property owners do. And so even for first-time home buyers, if you need to use the USDA program to get you into a home, it's one of the ways to get yourself on a strong financial path for the future. So I think it's really important that people recognize and take advantage of every opportunity they have to get into home ownership.
Oh, you could not convince me. I have been through two crashes. The house that I bought in 2007 was $400,000 upside down. And you cannot convince me that home ownership is not the right thing. I can tell you from a personal story, my first house was bought in 1991. It was a condo. And fast forward to 2025, I have never brought in any other money except for my first down payment, ever. I've always used the equity from my house. I've had rentals that I kept. I've always used the equity from my house. And I haven't put any extra money in except for my mortgage payment obviously went up.
Yeah.
It's so market is so under utilized on the appreciation that you get on the properties, the tax benefits that you get on the properties, and knowing that nobody's going to ask you to move out because they decided to sell your house at the wrong time,
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a few other loans that I wanted to talk about, sort of in broad strokes, the ARM or the adjustable rate mortgage, that seems to have a bad rap, but there are some times when it's really an appropriate product for someone. So can you describe what they are and then when would be about the right time to look at one of those options?
Sure. An adjustable rate mortgage is a fixed rate mortgage for a shorter period of time. It's probably the best way to explain it. So when you hear 5-year, 7-year, 10-year ARM, that number in front tells you how long it's fixed for. So, and then how it adjusts, every single loan will have a margin that is fixed. 7.5 is the margin right now on most of the loans. And then an index. And the index is what's variable. That's the variable portion of the ARM. And the index will go up and down depending on what the market's doing. There are caps and stuff. I don't want to overwhelm people, but that's how you do an adjustable rate mortgage. For me, in the market that we're heading into, where we're on a downward trend. Again, nobody can guarantee what's going to happen, but we're on a downward trend. Mm-hmm. An adjustable rate mortgage is right now about 0.25% lower than a fixed rate mortgage. So if you want to bank some of that money and have a little bit less payment, have more disposable income, an ARM's great for you. If you're only planning on staying in the house for 5 years, I want to promise you, don't do a 5-year loan. Do at least a 7 or a 10, because life always changes. But it's a great way for you to keep a lower payment, keep more disposable cash in your pocket. And it's not as scary as it sounds. We don't do the pick-a-pay loans anymore. Those were the old loans where the loan went negative every month. Those are gone. Those don't exist unless you're looking at a reverse mortgage. But that's a different type of loan. But they're really great. I am a proponent of adjustable rate mortgages when somebody knows they're, or here's another example. Somebody's just started as an engineer. They know they're about to get RSU income from the company and their income is going to double over the next 2 years. Put yourself on adjustable for the first couple of years while you're waiting and then change into a fixed. My philosophy is...
Let me ask you, RSU income, explain that for people. Because I've never gotten any RSU income that I'm aware of. I want to know what it is.
Usually that's going to be Amazon, Apple. It's restricted stock income. And what they do is instead of giving you a bonus, they award you with stock as your bonus. And it's awarded, you know, for X amount of years, and it vests every, you know, 6 months to 2 years. And as it vests, that money is now actually your income, your money to use. But it's great. And then the other reason why I use adjustable rate incomes is when I have, so number one, if somebody's moving fast or not going to be staying in the home loan. Number two, I've got an income structure changing, right? I've got something larger happen. And then the third reason, sometimes it's for qualifying. That 0.25%, I might have to put you in a 7-year ARM because I need to keep you under that 50% debt ratio.
Very good. Very good. Well, there are some other loans that are a little bit different. You know, jumbo loans, I think a lot of people understand that that's for higher amounts. But can you explain that a little bit? And also portfolio loans and what most people will never use, which is a hard money loan, just so that they have an idea what that means when they hear the phrase.
Sure. So your jumbo loans are going to be primarily for loan amounts that are 806-501 and above. They do have a stricter underwriting guideline than conventional because they do have a proponent that they need reserves. And a lot of people come in not having reserves. Their debt ratio incomes are a little bit tighter. Traditional banks want 43%. We range anywhere from 45 to 50%. So we'll let you go to either one of those for our jumbo products. They are, again, take a little bit longer time in underwriting because it's usually more complex borrowers that are getting the jumbo loans, and they'll have the restrictions on the reserves. The portfolio product, which I'm going to say portfolio and non-QM all in one fell swoop, because that covers, think of portfolio and non-QM as out of the box. You did not fit into the conventional and jumbo guidelines. So we're now taking our flange and we're moving it out this way. And so we're going to capture a little bit more. So we're going to allow a little bit more flexibility in the underwriting guidelines. Our portfolio and non-QM will go to 55% debt ratio. So if I have somebody that just missed the 50%, I can throw them into our non-QM. Non-QM, probably my favorite piece of non-QM is, and portfolio, is we use the primary wage earner's credit score. So let's say that you have a husband and wife that are own a company, a self-employed company. They're 50% owners each. The husband's credit score, something happened, and he's got a 660 credit score, but the wife's got a 760 credit score. Because they're 50% owners, I'm going to use the 760 credit score to qualify them and give them the better rate. Non-QM and portfolio products, when you hear that, they are going to be more expensive than traditional loans. Depending on your scenario, it's usually going to be anywhere from 0.25 point to 0.5 point higher than the traditional rate, but that's not bad in the grand scheme of things. Sometimes we'll put somebody in a portfolio or non-QM program because we know everything, life's about to change for them in a better next year, but they want the house this year because they don't want to lose out on the equity that they're gaining. So we'll do that.
So in my experience with portfolio loans, typically is somebody that has a really strong relationship with a particular bank. That bank is willing to be more lenient on the guidelines or the qualifying because of their relationship with that client. And they also don't sell it on the secondary market. And so the bank at that point is taking 100% of the risk for that loan. Is that correct? Is there anything that I missed there in that?
No. So that would be private wealth management loans. So if you carry $1 million or more at a bank, they do not make money on your mortgage. They make money on your deposit. So they are going to do everything they can to keep your business with their bank so you don't get teased with, you know, Chase's offer of, hey, I'll give you 1% more on your money. They want to keep your money. Also, you'll be assigned, usually with private wealth, you'll be assigned your own private wealth manager, and they will manage your account. I am telling you right now, if you can do private wealth, you're going to stay with your bank because they are going to do everything they can. You're going to have rates that nobody else sees because they want to keep your relationship. So they are fantastic loans. I don't do them. We used to have Flagstar that would let you do a relationship bank, but we don't have that right now. So I stick when you don't fit into that. Let's say it was too much risk. Other things that you can do when you have private wealth is you can pledge your assets. You can do a loan against your stock. There are so many things that you can do. So that's the creativity part that your private wealth manager will help you with. And if not, I can certainly help talk to you and get you to the right people that need to help you with that.
Sounds good. And the last one, the hard money loan, that, yeah. I laugh when I hear that because there are so many opinions about them. So share a little bit about that.
Okay. So we don't call them hard money loans anymore. We call them private money loans now.
I have a friend that calls it venture capital. Yes.
Oh, venture capital. Yes. That's another great one. Private money loans are going to be for clients that fit none of the other boxes. The first one, the most important one is bridge loans. Somebody hasn't sold their house. It's a need and a want. They got to have this next house. Their house hasn't sold. They need to do a bridge loan. So, cause they don't want to really carry a mortgage, and you're borrowing somebody else's 401k stock retirement. So when I try to explain to people why it's more expensive, they're taking money out of their own portfolio to loan to you at, let's call it 10%. So, but they're paying capital gains on the money they pulled out. So they're, and it's meant for short-term financing. So they're not going to make a lot of money off your interest. That's why they charge points. Most private money loans are going to be anywhere, depending on your loan size, 1.5 to 3 points. If you're doing a second, those could be in excess of 6 points. But they do have their need. Somebody who's got themselves into trouble and has an NOD being filed and they're about to lose their house, their only option is going to be private money at that point. Let me think if there's anything else. Private money will do a quick second on your house if you need it fast. Something popped up and you've got to. I have one client right now that's doing private money because their credit scores are 580 right now and they don't qualify for anything. So they're doing a private money loan for $100,000, paying off all their debt. We're rescoring their credit and we're refinancing them in 30 days. So
okay. That's an interesting tactic there.
It's a great way. I mean, or you might have somebody that, you know, some of the bridge loans and private money loans, they'll defer your payments while they're waiting for your house to sell. So they'll give you 6 months with no payments. Now, don't think that means you're not accruing interest. You're still accruing interest. Nothing's for free, but right. You don't have to actually physically write that check every month.
Well, fascinating. So we've talked about a lot of different kinds of financing and given overviews and in a lot of ways, given a lot of detail about some of the pros and cons of each one and possibilities. It might be too much for a lot of the people that are listening today to get in one listen. So they might have to come back and listen to this all over again. And they may want to shoot you some questions, you know, after by looking in the show notes in order to get in touch with you for that. But I want to ask you to give real estate agents, you know, some big picture advice. How should they position themselves when they're talking with clients about financing? What would you suggest that they do? How would you suggest that they present loan information to their client? And how quickly or how soon should they get themselves to a professional like you?
Well, I'll answer the last part of that first, as soon as possible. It doesn't hurt to give them our phone number and chat about it. I think as a real estate professional, everybody's afraid, well, I don't want the client to go somewhere else. If I tell them, hey, you need to go get pre-qualified first, you know, there was a time where nobody was pre-qualifying there for a while. You know, in COVID, almost anybody could qualify at a 2% rate. But those times are gone. Mm-hmm. And I would rather know up front as a real estate professional what kind of challenges I'm going to overcome. I have clients that I work with for 8 to 12 months to get them ready to purchase, and they go purchase. If they have low credit, I want to get them to a credit repair expert that can take care of it. But the big picture advice for the realtor, don't be afraid to say, somebody's telling you, oh, I don't think my thing that probably makes me cringe is when somebody says, yeah, I don't think I'm supposed to own a house. And I go, why? What stinking thinking is there that's making you think that? Or the client that, then you have the opposite end. The client that says, makes $2,000 a month and says, I want to buy that $1.5 million house. And I always go, fantastic. How much down payment do you have? You know, because if there's a will, there's a way. I will never put a client in a loan that's going to cause them to get foreclosed on. I won't do it. Mm-hmm. I'd rather walk away now and give them advice. Hey, why don't you wait until you secure the next job that you have? But I would say refer to the loan officer as quickly as possible and tell the client, what could it hurt for 5 minutes of a conversation?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
By the time I'm done with them, I always give them numbers. I want them to know this is an expectation. Okay. If you're buying $1 million house, you're looking at, you know, a $7,000 mortgage payment. Is that comfortable for you? Because as a realtor, although I know you want to sell your house, you want to bring a viable buyer to that house. You want to put them in the house that's going to be great for them. I would educate them on the different types of loans that we just went over.
Right.
There are so many different possibilities, and you don't have to give them the devil's in the details, right? You don't have to give them all the details. Just say, did you know there's grant programs, there's down payment assistance programs, there's VA, all these types of things, and just say, you can be a homeowner today. Because I believe that if you're responsible with your credit, you should be able to buy a home.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and I thank you for sharing that. You know, as soon as possible is a really good answer. And here's why I say that to real estate agents, you know, because I am one, and I've been talking with buyers for the last 40 years. And what I share with them is that, you know, if you don't want to compete with cash buyers and lose, go get yourself pre-qualified or pre-approved so that when you enter the market to buy, you can present your offer just as strongly as a cash buyer. If you are pre-approved, not pre-qualified, but if you're pre-approved, you can often come in with an offer that is just as strong as a cash offer. So that's an important thing to remember. So I appreciate you sharing all of this information with us today. How can our listeners get in touch with you? What's the best way to do that?
Best way is either my email address, which is going to be, my name is spelled Michelle with one L. So it's michelle@michelletown.com. So michelle@michelletown.com. Or my cell phone number is 949-510-9062. And I want everybody just to remember, homeownership, it's not a right. It's you've earned it. And if you have a job and you save money and you are, let's say you didn't save enough money, but there are other programs, we can put you into a house that's affordable. There's a variety of a suite of lending programs that can help you. And be surprised, you would be surprised. Bank of Mom and Dad, my dad helped me for my first house. He gave me my 3.5% down payment. It's my favorite bank, Bank of Mom and Dad, because there's no restrictions on that one. But please reach out. There is no question too dumb. I've been doing this a long time. And I promise you, if I don't know the answer, I'm like a sponge. I will go find it for you because I don't like not knowing. Our motto is think yes. We truly believe that. We don't believe in no. We believe that if you get a no, you've asked the question wrong.
Yeah. So Michelle, thank you for breaking this all down for us today. The lending world can feel overwhelming, but the way you've explained each loan option really makes it clear that there's something for every situation. And to our audience, I hope you take away this. As real estate professionals, we don't need to be the expert on every loan program, but we do need to be confident that solutions exist and then connect our clients to the right professional. Michelle and lenders like her are the ones who dig into the details, but you can now help your clients feel comfortable knowing that a loan designed for them is out there. So if this conversation gave you clarity, please share it with another agent, a buyer, or anyone you know who needs to hear it. The more we share knowledge, the stronger our industry becomes. In a time-tested mastery, my mission is simple. I try to help ordinary people like myself achieve extraordinary results through timeless principles of sales mastery, mindset, and transformation. Remember, time-tested mastery, real skills, real change. So thanks for listening, and until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep building the life you were made for.